It's Peter Tilden.
Acton!
Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilden at 10 begins right now. Brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep. They'll, of course, beat anyone's advertised price or your mattress is free. We've got the news quiz today for tickets to the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. We've got lots of local news. The LAPD wants to use drones. I'll get your take on that. But first, lots happening in Washington, D.C., not the least of which is that the Attorney General Jeff Sessions was in front of a Senate Judiciary Committee this morning. I want to find out what he said. On with us now is Lewis Nelson, a reporter at Politico. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. So what was the takeaway from Jeff Sessions appearing in front of this Senate Judicial Committee? I know parts of it was about James Comey and the firing. Parts of it were about Russia. But what are the bullet points from today's appearance?
The main point, I think, is that Sessions told the senators that he hasn't yet been interviewed by the special counsel by Robert Mueller's office as part of its sort of ongoing special investigation into Russian meddling in the election. And that's notable, of course, because Sessions has recused himself from that investigation and having to do with the fact that he had previously met with the Russian ambassador. And if listeners can, you know, remember back that far, it seems like there's sort of new developments and new controversies every day. Another particularly interesting point and key point was Sessions had a fairly terse exchange with Al Franken, the senator from Minnesota, who was the questioner during that confirmation hearing, where Sessions made that claim that he had not had any contact with Russian officials when in fact he had.
And what I saw that was getting contentious, I had to come here to go on the air. What was the resolution today? I saw that he was pushing back pretty hard at Al Franken. And Franken wasn't backing off. So was it an impasse?
Yeah, I think probably an impasse is the best way to describe it. A lot of it was in these hearings, you know, they're described as having a witness that offers testimony and answers questions. But a lot of times the questions are sort of more monologues with a sort of loosely phrased question at the end of it. The senators are more trying to make a point than they are really trying to obtain any information. And that was the case here. Senator Franken sort of got up and didn't get up. He was, you know, up on the dais and delivering a little bit of a monologue about how Sessions had only begun to qualify his answer about having previous interaction with Russian officials after news reports broke about those meetings. And Sessions sort of took offense and said, well, you know, no. And they pushed back and forth about, who was being unfair to who, I guess.
All right. And then all of a sudden time's up and you go to the next guy who gets some FaceTime.
Exactly.
Now, speaking of the Mueller investigation, I know that former press secretary Sean Spicer was interviewed on Monday. So it appears Mueller's team is getting closer to the inner circle of the Trump administration. And he also talked to Reince Priebus, I think, on Friday. Is that correct, that they're now calling in people close to the White House? I think the next person coming in is Don McGahn, the White House counsel, is going to be in there. So, and then also the advisor to Jared Kushner. Does it feel like it's winding down, or does it feel like it's just an ongoing thing that's going to limp off into the sunset forever?
I don't know. I certainly don't know that I would say that it's winding down. I don't know that we have a clear idea of exactly what the timeline is going to be. I haven't heard or seen or read anything that would indicate that there is a definitive timeline about when this might end or how long a target end date or anything like that. But you're right to say that this investigation is sort of getting closer and closer to the Oval Office, even if, and it's important to say that the president hasn't at this point been accused of any wrongdoing directly. But there are people like Sean Spicer, like former Chief of Staff Reince Priebus, like White House Counsel Don McGahn, who have been questioned by the Special Prosecutor's Office. And then there's people like Paul Manafort, who was Donald Trump's former campaign chairman, who was questioned and had a warrant served on his home as well.
Yeah, and a friend of mine in Washington said, "What's happening to Manafort?" And he said, "He's getting ready. If he knows what's happening, because this is somebody who'd gone to jail, said that when they invade your house that way early morning to wake you up, you get your stuff in order because you're probably going away at some time in the future. If you can clear up something for me, I'd appreciate it." The president has made in the last day, I think, a couple of flip-flops on health care that I'm confused about. When he was in the Rose Garden yesterday, we were watching, as a matter of fact, we broadcasted with the Greek prime minister. He was talking about insurance rates going up, and he's not going to fund insurance companies with subsidies because they make a ton of money. Halfway through that press conference, he talked about the bipartisan Alexander Murray bill that's coming out, and he said that he was happy for that legislation because it's going to temporarily fund some subsidies so it can keep health care afloat. And then today he's tweeting, no subsidies, no deal across the aisle. It must be maddening for people who are trying to do legislation when he gives you the okay, or appears to be an okay, for the legislation and the subsidies. First off, the A is no subsidies. We're not going to support that. B is subsidies for a year or two. Today, I oppose, Trump and Ryan oppose bipartisan Obamacare deal is the headline on Politico. What happened there? Why did he do I guess that's a triple flip-flop.
Yeah, so that's sort of the million-dollar question, I guess, here in Washington, and it's a question that I'm sure that lawmakers on Capitol Hill would like to know. I mean, the president is certainly a guy who's prone to shifts in opinion or prone to changing his position on something like this. Relatively quickly. This, you know, I don't think this as confusing as it sort of was. It didn't necessarily seem out of character. I don't think anybody was stunned that the president had sort of given some mixed signals on this. The idea, you know, it's especially fascinating, I think, to your point, that at this press conference the other day, the president said not only did he support this sort of bipartisan deal, but that he had been involved in it and looped in on it and aware of it from the very beginning, he said. And then more recently, he said, you know, no, I don't support, bailing out insurance companies. I support the process of a bipartisan deal, but I don't necessarily back what they're going to come to. And so it's again one of these things where I think lawmakers on Capitol Hill certainly are frustrated that the president seems to, again, mix signals, makes their life a lot more difficult.
Or Lewis, did somebody or a lot of people, after he said that, did a lot of people call the White House? Did the GOP get on the phone and go, what are you doing, endorsing a bipartisan deal and with subsidies? No. And somebody got to him and said, you got to come out tomorrow and say, no, that is not what I said, and it's not what I want to do. Because down the road, by the way, if you're not stabilizing the insurance markets, again, a lot of his constituents and base are going to lose their insurance, or their rates are going to go way through the roof, and the party is going to own it.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think the president has tried to walk this really fine line, to your point, of trying to do something about Obamacare without having to take responsibility for Obamacare, right? He doesn't want Obamacare, which has become such a sort of rhetorical, political weapon for Republicans to use against Democrats, to then be flipped on them. And he doesn't want healthcare to now become something that Democrats can go after Republicans, with in 2018, and then even further down the road in the next presidential election in 2020. So that's why you see things like where the president will take an executive order to, like for instance, getting rid of the CSR payments, the insurance subsidies that he's been talking about lately. A step like that dramatically sort of weakens Obamacare and weakens these marketplaces. But then at the same time, he'll come out, he'll post something on Twitter or say something in a exchange with reporters or something like that, where he says, oh, well, it's still the Democrats' problem. Democrats are responsible for fixing this. The Democrats instituted Obamacare, and it's still their fault, even though he is the one who has taken steps most recently to sort of weaken the nation's healthcare system and weaken the healthcare sort of logistics and infrastructure, if you will. So that's the tightrope he's trying to walk.
And it's fascinating talking about this and then looking at this poll, and I think you guys printed it, so listen to these statistics carefully. 46% of those polled think the media make up stories about Trump. So that's nearly half the voters believes the news media fabricates news stories about President Trump and his administration. According to your own poll, the Politico Morning Consult poll, just 37% of voters think the media do not fabricate stories. So that plays well into his narrative. The fake news, hammering the fake news, has worked for him, apparently.
Yeah, and I think that that's obviously, I mean, certainly we don't, we're not in the business of making anything up here at Politico, but I think you're right that it speaks to something that, this, you know, the president has sort of successfully with some percentage of the public, and it, well, you know, maybe he's been successful in doing this, and maybe people already thought this, but some percentage of the public, egged on, goaded by the president, believes that the media is dishonest, makes things up about him, you know, works actively, has an agenda against him, and you see him constantly coming out labeling, characterizing stories that are unfavorable to him, stories that he doesn't like, as fake news. And obviously from that poll, I think is an indication that at least some percentage of Americans believe him.
Well, 46 is a pretty big percentage. This new controversy, yeah, today, Lewis, and I waited to ask you about it, talking to Lewis Nelson, a reporter, Politico, where the president denied today that he told the widow of a U.S. serviceman killed in an ambush that he knew when he signed up, what he signed up for, but I guess it still hurt. And you have this Democratic congresswoman now in a fight with him, Frederica Wilson, who says that the widow cried, the president was not, didn't show empathy. Part of this, though, which is pretty interesting, I watched her interviews, and she's ragging on the president, saying how horrific it was, the phone call. She did say, there was a line in there that I caught, where she said, I didn't listen to the whole conversation. So we don't know total context, etc. But this, again, has become the narrative in the news cycle. CNN's running with it day and night. This is their lead story. This is kind of an unforced error because the president brought up previous administrations and made a charge that they didn't reach out the way ostensibly he does to the families of fallen soldiers. And then the Obama administration, the Bush administration pushed back. Then he brought up John Kelly's son, and John Kelly's pretty private, and he hasn't commented. So now this is the news cycle. This is today, at least on CNN or left-leaning outlets. They're on this all day long as a story that he was not like I said, empathy is politicizing the loss. And the big question is that the Pentagon is not going to investigate what actually happened. Why were these four Green Berets ambushed the way they were ambushed? How's this story going to play out? What are you hearing in Washington at this point? Is this becoming a major issue?
Well, I think so. The White House press briefing is scheduled to come up here in, I guess, a little less than 45 minutes, closer to 40 minutes now. And it, you can, if I was a gambling man, I'd put a lot of money down on Sarah Huckabee Sanders being asked quite a few questions about this exchange. And the reason it's a big deal, in addition to just it, you know, the president's words sort of carrying weight, and his reaction to these sort of things carrying weight, is that there's some context here. You think back to the presidential campaign last summer, when the president sort of got into this days-long, maybe weeks-long, it's hard to remember at this point, a feud going back and forth with the Khan family. That's that Muslim family whose son was killed, the father, Khazir Khan, got up and gave this sort of big thundering remarks at the Democratic National Convention, absolutely sort of slamming the president up and down, and then Trump sort of got into this war of words with him and feuding with him, and so the president's sort of overall treatment of families who have lost sons, daughters, husbands, wives, whatever it is, to combat, killed in action, things like that. The president's handling of people like that and interaction with people like that, is now sort of a trend, so to speak. Whether or not he's, you know, possesses the ability to be empathetic towards these people, and you know, now the president is in this sort of he said she said situation with the congresswoman and with the widow of this fallen soldier, with her family, the congresswoman and the family of the widow saying, yep, the president said this, and the president saying, no, I didn't. It's certainly, like you said, an unforced error is probably a good way to describe it.
Yeah, because it didn't have to grow into this, the enormity with which it's being presented all day long. Also want to ask you, I'm talking to Lewis Nelson from Politico, Senate Judiciary Committee just launched a probe into this Russian corruption surrounding this uranium deal, which we heard about, that they're blaming Hillary about. So they got the Senate Judiciary Committee that's opened this Obama-era Uranium One deal that was made with Russia. What is that on a scale, a level of concern? Because it's fascinating this thing has cropped up.
Yeah, this is a hearing that this gets back to an issue that I think that Donald Trump and a lot of people in these sort of Republican is sort of right leaning media. Sean Hannity likes to talk about this uranium deal a lot, and it gets to this is often sort of like a counterpoint when they say, oh, you know, there's a Russian there's Russian interference or Russian this or that. This is often a counterpoint that is pushed back with. They say, well, what about this uranium deal? This is sort of a crooked deal as well. And so I think it's still sort of in the early stages, at least, of a Senate investigation. So I think in terms of level of concern, this is sort of a wait-and-see sort of a situation, at least for the time being.
And with 30 seconds left to go, the president blasted the NFL for not adopting a requirement for players to stand during the national anthem. I guess they haven't caved in at this point. And I know that Colin Kaepernick, potentially, he's got this lawsuit that he's filing against the league. The president enters into that lawsuit, becomes part of it because of his urging of the NFL owners, which could give the appearance of collusion by the owners, which is what Colin Kaepernick has to prove to win the lawsuit.
Yeah, so legally speaking, I'm not sure how much Donald Trump does or does not, would or would not be involved in that case. But he's certainly part of the larger discussion, and he's certainly taken that discussion as sort of a sports-centric discussion among sports fans and football people, whether or not people should kneel during the national anthem, and raised that into a national-level debate, really amplified it and given it a lot of oxygen.
Well, and it's going to continue. They're going to meet again and continue discussing it, but it looks like the league is not, it sure looks like they're not going to cave and put this into their requirements for the players to stand during the anthem. Lewis, I appreciate it. We covered a lot of ground. Lewis Nelson is a reporter at Politico. The website, of course, is politico.com, and the Twitter at LouisJNelson, NELSON. And I appreciate you coming on and taking your time to be with us.
Hey, it's a pleasure, Peter. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. We'll talk again. We'll talk to you too. 800-222-5222. Yeah, the big story again on CNN. It's wall to wall. He said, she said about the widow who's pregnant, has a couple other kids, was in a car with a congresswoman who in Florida who was riding with her and heard the comments that the president made, and she upset the widow, and now it's back and forth. And now the mother of the fallen soldier is being interviewed. The brother of a soldier who was killed is being interviewed and saying he's okay with the president saying, but it's becoming a huge, huge issue as far as how to treat this, and is it being politicized, and should it be politicized? 800-222-5222. More about Trump blasting the NFL. Talk about that. Also, the LAPD is going to start using drones, and I guess it's a very big deal that a lot of you don't like that. We'll discuss the ramifications of that and some other local stories when Peter Tilden at 10 continues right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10 continues. The phone number 800-222-5222. Camille, I'll get right to you in a moment. I do want to talk about the NFL for a moment coming up, and the president's pressuring them to stand, pressuring the owners to get the players to stand in a minute. Also, the security guard in Las Vegas, Jesus Campos, he has appeared. And I'll tell you where he appeared, because it's an unlikely place to appear. Remember, he was scheduled to do a lot of interviews in Vegas after the shooting, after the massacre. And he was waiting apparently in a green room, and his advisors were in another room, and they came out and he disappeared for days. We didn't know where he was. Well, he's speaking now, and I'll tell you where he appeared again. If you can explain to me why he decided to appear at this particular venue, I'd love to hear your take. So we'll do that. Also, Stevie Wonder can see or not. All of that and more just in the next half hour here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. 800-222-5222. We'll be right back.
KABC News is live and local at 10:30, and I'm Jeff Whittle. Attorney General Jeff Sessions bristled under questioning by Democratic Senator Al Franken today when Franken accused Sessions of being untruthful when Sessions denied meeting with any Russians last year at a previous Senate hearing.
And that's been the suggestion that you've raised and others, that it was somehow we had conversations that were improper.
May I suggest that?
No. You had a long time, Senator Franken. I'd like to respond.
Now, a 30-acre brush fire that broke out early yesterday morning near the Mount Wilson Observatory in the Angeles National Forest is now 25% contained. The cause of the fire is under investigation. Also, a brush fire that erupted this morning along the 57 freeway in Brea scorched about 15 acres before it was extinguished. Now, police in Fontana shot and killed a mountain lion in a backyard yesterday, and the homeowners have quite a story to tell.
Yvonne Martin called police and then told NBC4 News,
I thought, what is that? You know, and it wasn't a possum, and it wasn't a raccoon, so I told my husband to come look at it.
And we thought it was a dog, but looking at it closer, I said, I think that's a mountain lion.
Police arrived with animal control officers who say they've been looking for a mountain lion, which had killed animals at two separate area homes. Animal control officers don't carry tranquilizers, so once the mountain lion charged at them, police shot it. Also, according to animal control, it appeared the animal was sick. A necropsy was to be performed. Ken Jeffries, KABC News.
Talk Radio 790 KABC Sports. Well, the Dodgers can complete their sweep of the Cubs in advance to the World Series for the first time since 1988 with another win over Chicago tonight at Wrigley Field in Game 4 of the NLCS. Blue blasted the Cubs 6-1 last night to remain undefeated in the playoffs. Now, the Yankees rallied to beat the Astros 6-4 to even up the ALCS at two games each. Game 5 of that series starts at 2 o'clock today in the Bronx. Our second-place L.A. Kings host the last-place Canadians at 7 o'clock tonight on KABC. And that's sports on the home of the L.A. Kings, 790 KABC. Traffic, a market check, weather, and more Tilden at 10. Next, KABC News Time, 10:33.
Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10 continues. Don't forget, tickets to Trans-Siberian Orchestra, a huge show. It's like Pink Floyd with a Christmas theme and pyrotechnics. And it's an amazing show. It's at the Citizens Bank Arena, and I got tickets for that when we do the Peter Tilden News Quiz. Right now, however, let's go to the phone and say hi to Camille in Hawthorne. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter. The President of the United States shows me daily that he is not the sharpest tool in anyone's shed. He doesn't support women. He doesn't support black people. He doesn't support Hispanics. He doesn't support Puerto Ricans. And he doesn't support whites who disagree with him. And I've watched him for 10 months. Now, let me tell you why this is painful for me. Because he got 8% of the black vote, which I was surprised. He got 11% of the Hispanic or Mexican vote. And he got about 40% of the female vote when he was campaigning. But like sleeping dogs lie. After he got in, he shows me that the only people he really support is neo-Nazis. Now, from what I can see, they're all just white men. I mean, what you call angry white men, not regular, normal white men.
So what you're saying, you can cut through because of time. You're saying his whole base is neo-Nazis and that's all he's doing is supporting his base?
I'm saying that's who he's feeding more than, yeah, because my thing is when he was so worried about black men kneeling, and not worried about the people in Puerto Rico.
Well, by the way, let me talk about the black men kneeling thing. Is the I see the breaking news is going to be that the NFL is going to address the issue in just a couple of minutes of the president pressuring the league. The interesting thing and the moving parts there, and there's a bunch I want to talk about, a bunch of other things I want to talk about today. But Colin Kaepernick is of course accusing the NFL owners of colluding. The deal is that the president potentially could be involved in that grievance in the sense that Kaepernick has to prove that a couple teams colluded to keep him out. And he's saying, you know, there are worse quarterbacks than me. There are people injured. And yet they're overlooking my deal. The union representative said some stuff that implies that there was collusion. And one in the Bleacher Report, a piece by Mike Freeman, said an unnamed general manager who analyzed why no NFL team had signed Kaepernick. The quote was, some teams genuinely believe he can't play. They think he's shot, and I put that number around 20%. Some teams fear the backlash from fans after getting him, and they think there might be protests or the president will tweet about the team. I'd say that's around 10%, and then there's another 10% that has a mix of those feelings, which means 10% of the league, 3 to 6 teams, may have colluded. I mean, the implication, the subtext is they may have colluded. Is that enough evidence? Not sure. But Jerry Jones came back after supporting the team, and showing unity before the anthem. They said you can kneel before the anthem. But he then changed his tone, and the president tweeted, spoke to Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys yesterday. Jerry is a winner who knows how to get things done. Players will stand for the country. So if he can prove that the president forced the teams to collude. It's up to a law professor named Stephen Burbank, who's a neutral arbitrator, who's going to determine whether this adds up to an implicit collusion case. So that's kind of fascinating. The other thing that's happening today, and I just saw this breaking news, the father of a slain serviceman just told CNN he believes critics of the president reported comments to a soldier's widow were mistaken out of context, and that wasn't his intended meaning. And I got to tell you, I got up and I heard what the president said. I didn't hear it. I saw what the president said. He knew what he signed up for, but I guess it still hurts, is what he said to the widow. And I thought, in the context of a five-minute conversation, I don't know how that came out. It didn't sound horrible to me. It sounded like what he was saying was, when you're a soldier, you know what you sign up for. And it's awful when it happens. And the other part of this that's interesting is a representative who's in the argument back and forth with him. She gave a bunch of interviews where she said that it was cold-hearted, etc. But here's what she said that kind of caught my ear.
I didn't hear the entire conversation, but when I tried to find out what the entire conversation was, she said, I just can't remember.
So that was the piece. Listen what she starts out saying.
I didn't hear the entire conversation.
So she may have taken it out of context and politicized as politicizing it, not saying that the president kind of started it in the Rose Garden when he mentioned the previous his predecessors and how they treat the families of fallen soldiers, and that brought a whole lot of baggage with it. But what's your take on that? It didn't seem to me to be horrific. He knew what he signed up for, but I guess it still hurt in the context of a five-minute conversation. There could have been empathy there. There could have been a lot of other stuff that was said that Frederica Wilson...
I didn't hear the entire conversation.
...didn't hear and is jumping on and maybe politicizing it. 800-222-5222. Coming up, I told you that Jesus Campos, the security guard from Las Vegas, disappeared for quite a few days, rather odd, and then decided to finally give an interview. And I will reveal to you who he gave the interview to, and if you can explain to me why, I would love to hear your take. We'll do that next, 800-222-5222, and Peter Tilden at 10 continues right after this. Talk Radio 790 KBC, Peter Tilden at 10 continues with Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Huge show that you will remember for a long time, and I'm going to give you a chance to win tickets soon. We play the news, because but first I'm going to go to Frank in Costa Mesa. Hi, Frank. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, in any context, you probably shouldn't make that comment to the grieving widow. It doesn't really matter what was said prior. You have the good sense to know, well, he signed up for that. It's just something that you don't say at that moment to the widow. You might think it to yourself, but it's just something that's better left unsaid.
Again, I saw it, and I don't disagree with you. On the other hand, hearing the Frederica Wilson, say, I didn't hear the entire call, and it was a five-minute phone call, I started thinking, well, what if he said how brave your son was and other people wouldn't have done what he does? And the fact that... And then finished it with... And slipped in there the fact that he's so brave, and soldiers like your son know what they're getting into. They know, I mean,
yeah,
so it's all in the, look, we can argue it back and forth because it was a private conversation. It's just fascinating that this has become a huge story because he gets it in the shorts. If he doesn't call, then he does call, and this woman's riding in the car with him, and they've made it this, the issue of the day. The issue of the day is what happened to these four soldiers and why, and were they supported enough, and did they have the right equipment?
But he started this garbage in the Rose Garden. And I wish Donald Trump could get rid of his obsession with Obama.
Well, the Rose Garden, he did. The mistake there was, when he was asked the question, that he brought up previous administrations and punted and said that they don't necessarily do call the soldiers, et cetera. And then it was that he did, and he hadn't done it yet, and then the letter went out Monday. So it did open a whole Pandora's box. But if you see this representative in Florida talking, it's a big, big, become a big, big issue. And thank you for that, Frank. Here's a clip. Here's a small clip of what she said.
I don't know what kind of proof he could be talking about. I'm not the only person that was in the car. And I have proof, too. This man is a sick man. He's cold-hearted, and he feels no pity or sympathy for anyone. This is a grieving widow who is 6 months pregnant. This is a young woman. She's only 24 years old. She weighs maybe 110 pounds, and she has two other kids. 2 years old and 6 years old. And when she actually hung up the phone, she looked at me and said, he didn't even know his name. Now, that's the worst part.
So there you go. And again, the beginning of that.
Now, I didn't hear the entire conversation.
So it was 5-minute conversation. She heard pieces in the car. And the widow was driving to, sadly, to reclaim the body that had just arrived. She was on the way to the Air Force base and had asked for it to be an open coffin. And they said, no, it can't. So she was in the throes of turmoil. You can imagine the state that she's in. And the mother of the soldier who lost his life also said that the president was insensitive. But this politician, Representative Frederica Wilson, she's being interviewed everywhere, and this is becoming the issue of the day. And it did start in the Rose Garden. It did start, I guess, if the president had not brought up previous presidents, the question was, have you called? Did you reach out to them? Because it's been quite a while, 2 weeks since they died. Have you not? And if not, why have you not? And then that became, well, not only Dylan and I did it, but the others didn't do it too. It's like when you say the cookie jar is broken, but my brother did that too. So that kind of kicked off and launched it. Coming up, as I said, Jesus Campos, the security guard in Vegas, bailed on a lot of interviews. Why? Wasn't in hiding for quite a few days. Why? And then chose this forum in which to break his silence. I'll tell you what that forum was. In just a moment, Talk Radio 790 KBC.